Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
I want a rumba and I want one now. Doesn't really work, does it? No, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Latitude Festival 2022. I don't know why I said that. Many of you have been here for days. What I meant to say was welcome to this live recorded... Who the f*** is that? Turn it down! Have some respect! We're trying to do a podcast record here.
The Festival. There's really nothing quite like it.
How you guys doing?
When you pick the right acts to see, it's musical nirvana. So if given the power of the festival gods to have absolutely any act you desire, alive or not, playing in that perfect spot at the perfect moment, who would you choose?
MC5.
Oh, yeah.
And Stooges. Detroit Supernova. I just imagine this is the perfect one. It's going to be Burt Bacharach and Friends.
I was like, yes!
It's such an anthem for that, isn't it?
If you're wearing a coat, you got to take that coat off, baby, and get wet up.
Behold, the greatest day of our lives.
Let's go!
Welcome to the lineup, you beautiful spirit of Eden.
And we kept getting the call that she was going to come round and have a listen. So it was basically 3 days on this tune, sort of day and night, with occasional intense hoovering sessions. But she she never turned up.
Yeah, never came.
Thank you. Welcome to this live version of The Lineup with me, Sean Keaveney. It is a fantasy festival podcast. How many of you subscribe currently to The Lineup? Put your hands up. Look at that, Nat. Look at all those people. That's a feast of people who have been hitting that subscribe button immediately after this performance. Now, I usually do a long and laboured introduction to my guests, like a sort of prog rock keyboard solo of an introduction. But our actual very special guests have got to headline in about an hour and a bit's time, and I don't want to make them late. So, here goes. They'll super style it out by the river or the lake. I see you, baby, shaking that ask. That was shit. So let's welcome to the lineup live and tease out the five fantasy festival headline acts of Tom and Andy Groove and Bada! Going to be late on stage because this is going to overrun by 45 minutes, which will be awkward. Of course, I'm joking. No, the first thing we have to do is the idea, for the people that don't know, is that, and apologies for wearing sunglasses indoors, but the prescription sunglasses, and it's the only way that I can read my notes. I'm not being Bono, okay? Though he does wear those for medical reasons, let's not forget that. But for the people that don't know, it's a fantasy, a bit like one of those fantasy dinner parties, you know, where you could invite absolutely anybody in the world. Living or dead, we need five acts, okay? But before we get into that, we need to name the festival. Now, it's a bit awkward for you because you've already got a fucking festival. The Lovebox Festival, of course.
Yeah.
So essentially what we're doing here is we're creating something and you're going to be in competition with yourself.
Yeah.
Which is a bit awkward. And we can maybe come back to that. One of the things I thought was if it was going to be a bit like a car and music-related festival, it could be called Glovebox. God, that was terrible, wasn't it? Let's forget about the name for now. Let's think about where in the world would you like to put this fantasy festival?
Crikey. Any thoughts?
You're hard to beat Suffolk, aren't you, really, looking around us? But I think a festival needs, or an ideal festival, needs a water frontage.
A water frontage?
Yeah, I think so. I think the sort of...
Sorry? Lowestoft?
Yeah.
Heckling,
you took the
true.
Words out of my mouth. I was about to say, so Lowestoft, yeah. I think...
Perfect.
Yeah, let's agree on that.
Okay, let's... All right, we'll put it in Lowestoft. That was easy. I call it Lowestine, but... Of course I'm joking. But this is one of my producer Nat's suggestions. If it was in Madrid or Barcelona, we could call it the Spanish Armada.
Lovely.
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah. But no.
We could. Let's stick with lower stuff.
Let's lower stuff.
Yeah. We'll stick with lower stuff. Okay. No, you don't have to dream. As I've said, you have got your own festival. Love Box, and we'll come on to that a little bit later on. The other thing, by the way, because we've got a limited amount of time, when I start gabbling off at the mouth, a young gentleman called Elliot is going to come on stage and start dancing the Macarena, and that's when we have to move on to the next act. So don't be disturbed by that. It's one perfect day, this festival. It starts early in the morning and it goes late into the night. It's just one particular day. And so here we are in beautiful Lowestoft. The weather is gorgeous. We can see the sea out for miles. It's extremely exciting. Who is the first act that we are going to put on stage of your fantasy festival?
Okay, this is going to be a controversial one, I think. But it's our fantasy festival, so we can do what we like,
whatever,
right?
If you like.
So I think that it's a real guilty pleasure of mine, this one. But I'm going to stick Hall & Oates on. To open the festival. I'm going to bring them over from California, wherever they are, from Sonoma Wine County, where they've been doing a gig, haul them into Lowestoft and get them to play, like, Abandoned Luncheonette, which is my favourite Hall & Oates record. Maybe we'll just do that, recreate that as for our opening set.
What a brilliant idea. So would you get them to do the whole of Abandoned Luncheonette
like
bands
sometimes
do? That
would be good. And then they can throw in a few of the cheesy ones afterwards, yeah.
A few of the cheesy ones. She's gone away. Like that.
That, exactly. Beautiful.
That was the full Daryl Hall, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A brilliant idea. Andy, I think this is a quote from yourself, this. When you've got a field with no rules, there's no limit to how bad the behaviour can be.
I'll take it.
Let's face facts. Over the years, you've played many festivals, you've played many, many gigs, you've put on many festivals. What are the kind of most outrageous and egregious acts that you have seen people perform during those times? You know, hedonistic, scatological, anything that you could put on record here on the lineup?
No. No, but I think we are really privileged, actually, to have begun doing what we do in a pre-mobile phone era. Because that ability to go off, you know, for 3 or 4 days and be totally free and where you are, and like no one knows what you're doing. The scenes from that era in particular are ones that I'm very privileged to have experienced. And I don't think that's going to come back anytime soon, but we were there and it was a lot of fun.
From what we can remember, it was a lot of fun. But this is a good point. I mean, when you're putting on a festival, this is a fictional one, Love Box, very much in reality. How does that work? You must be dealing with some colossal egos a lot of the time. You've hosted some of the biggest names in music. How do you deal with those huge egos? And have you ever had times where you've had to give somebody a verbal slap down?
I remember Grandmaster Flash refusing to come out of his car for about an hour. I don't know why.
How do you coax a Grandmaster Flash out of an air-conditioned vehicle? Like, I love that idea. Come on. There's some catnip.
Yeah.
That's an incredible thought. Hall & Oates as an opening act at the Dawn Chorus of this phenomenal festival, as yet unnamed, in Lowestoft, which is going to be incredible. So, we move on to our next act. It's mid-morning, I suppose. It's getting a little bit warm now, as we've been experiencing over the last few days. Getting a little bit dusty. The sea air is beginning to crystallise a little bit. Hall & Oates have done a barnstorming set. They were quite happy with just a few onion barges from Waitrose, as it turns out.
No problem.
Who is our next act going to be?
Well, no sooner has the stage been cleared and reset than Candy Staton walks on and sings Young Hearts Run Free.
Okay.
Keep going.
What's the sense in changing this one and only life? See, you don't need anybody else, do you? You've missed the trick not booking me. So Candy comes on. You've worked with Candy Staton
before. No, we have. You see, that's the thing. And we've had some... Well, there's an amazing moment. We were going to... Well, we did play Love Box with her. And we did a version of You Got the Love, obviously. And we got down to the rehearsal room to rehearse this tune. This is, you know, Candy Staton, one of the greatest vocalists of all time. And we started rehearsing, and she was incredibly nervous. And it wasn't really working out. And so we asked everyone to just go and have a cup of tea. And I had this incredible 15 minutes where I was in the room with Candy. And when my dad taught me all these old traditional blues songs. So I just started playing these blues songs on the piano, and she just started jamming and just relaxing a bit and going for it. But that was one of the greatest 15 minutes of my life. So even just for that, she had to come along. But since then, obviously, she's got that tune, which has, you know, defined moments for generations of people. But Young Hearts Run Free is something that we've started playing now for the last sort of 6-7 years in DJ sets anywhere, anytime, any generation. It's a transformational record.
It's something, there's a great Radio 4 program called Soul Music. I don't know if you've ever heard it. And they basically just explore a particular song and, you know, what it means to so many different people. And there's a special, an edition of it about Young Hearts Run Free. And it's just such a beautiful story. I think it's sort of a semi-autobiographical song for her, isn't it? Not that she wrote it, but I think the guy who wrote it sort of wrote it for her because she was in a very bad marriage sort of thing. So must be cathartic for her every time she plays it, I would have thought.
Yeah, and she's just an amazing presence of a woman, and like so many of the people we've worked with, she's proof that there's an inverse correlation between talent and bullshit.
Yeah. You know?
And I'll leave you to work out that correlation and inverse it.
Well, I've got 9 bodyguards outside, so you work that one out.
Hello, it's me, Jamie Lang, and I've got a new podcast, and this time there are no gimmicks. It's just great company. Because the thing is, I realize the reason I love podcasts so much is because they're a great way to connect with people.
Hello, I'm Youngblood.
Joe Brand.
I'm Paloma Faith.
Jay Blades.
Elizabeth Day.
Zara Larson. Casper
Lee. And I'm Great Company.
Great Company.
Great Company.
Great Company.
Apparently.
It's Great Company with me, Jamie Lang. Coming Wednesday, the 27th of March.
I mean, we should talk about, there's so much to talk about, in particular, like that, you working with Candy. You've worked with, like, your version of Back to My Roots with Richie Havens at Brixton is just one of the most fucking brilliant versions. I mean, I love that song anyway, and Lamont Dozier, I think, did it first.
That's right, yeah.
Which is a great version, but yours is like, it's a faster tempo.
Yeah.
And you've got Richie Havens singing on it, for Christ's sake. I mean, how do you get to work? What's your approach to approaching talent? Do you just call them, text them, skywrite over their Hollywood mansion? How do you get them to do work with you?
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to an album we did called Goodbye Country, Hello Nightclub, and that's got Nile Rodgers on that as well. And that was, again, like, that's probably pre-mobile phone days, right? We did that record. So I actually, with that one, was going up to like a red phone box and ringing his manager. It was like bizarre. And just sending the stuff. And I think sometimes you just got to kind of have the kind of belief in yourself that these people, they're excited about the idea of connecting with younger people, which at that time we were. I'm not sure that really counts now, but it was then. And yeah, it was amazing. We sent off a couple of What Were Dats then, and he sent them back. But that version, Going Back to My Roots, so he does a version of that,
yeah,
which predates our version, yeah, which is like almost like a house record. I really remember like being 18, 19 in a field somewhere in Cambridge where I grew up, having a really good time, and that tune came on, and it was one of the moments of my life, you know, and it kind of propelled me into wanting to make a career in music, really. Yeah. So then that come full circle, and to be performing that with him, and we came on the road with us. We did a gig with him in what, the Twin Towers, you know, like right before, like about 2 weeks before the whole thing came down.
Good
and
God.
It was incredibly emotional. He was telling us about how he used to play down in the kind of scaffolding down there where they were building it. He's an amazing guy and had all these great stories. And he also had this sweet thing where he liked to have a cheeky cigarette and he'd hide it in his cowboy boots. And when his manager wasn't looking, he'd nip one out. So he was very, very human and like, but an amazing spirit. I mean, you know, it was a total privilege to have been around him.
I mean, I say, how do you get these people to work with you? But there's that story that I love about Elton John and Matt Madonna in Heathrow Airport or something like that, and they're arguing about who discovered you first.
Yeah.
They're like, Madonna brought the Vertigo album, a CD out of a handbag or something, and was like to Elton, look, I got it first. I was on these guys before you, Elton. Is that not apocryphal? That really happened?
Apparently that really happened, yeah, yeah. And there was a time when we were doing a remix for Madonna. And as always, we've always just ended up in little studios and cubby holes for some reason. We never got our act together on that front. So I had a little flat off Brick Lane at the time, and we had a studio there, and we were doing this remix for Madonna, and we kept getting the call that she was going to come around and have a listen. So it was basically 3 days on this tune, sort of day and night, with occasional intense hoovering sessions. But she never turned up.
Yeah, never came.
Borrowing hoovers from next door in case Madonna turns up. I can see Eli doing the Macarena, which means that it's time for our next act. So it's a beautiful soul start to this perfect festival. Hall & Oates, Candy Staton. Who is going? It's about lunchtime as well, just a bit after. Yeah. Who's taking the next act and who's it going to be?
Well, I am, but you've slightly ruined it.
I always do.
Yeah, next up is Richie Havens. I was going to do a spoiler alert when you started on that, but anyway.
I ruin everything in the end, Andy. It's something you should know about me. At least we got there quite early on in the podcast. So what does Richie's music mean to you? Why is it that he speaks to your soul so much, do you think?
I think there's just an incredible power of humanity in him as a person and as a musician, which is in a lot of contrast to the highly produced world which you live in on all aspects of society, really. And so I could just really picture him coming on, as he did to open Woodstock, of course, one man and his guitar, and this incredible sort of impassioned energy, but then bridging from that, ending with the Going Back to My Roots track, and it's that real kind of, you know, day into early evening moment.
Yeah,
when you hit Going Back to My Roots, hopefully, if we can persuade him, he'll do the version that we did at Brixton, which ends with this kind of mad tribal pounding.
That's right. The congas, the bongos, it's all going on, isn't it? Your drummer is just on fire. Yeah. It's all beautiful to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that would be... I mean, yeah, I forget that he opened Woodstock.
Yeah.
Jesus wept. Did he ever talk to you about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we were on the bus with him for quite a long time. So, yeah, we got a lot of stories from Richie and, you know, note to self, write them down next time. But yeah, you know, that Twin Towers moment was a real piece of history for us. So, yeah.
You're not the only one. Me and Kerris Matthews in 2011 at the Glastonbury Festival got ushered onto B.B. King's tour bus to interview him. And we got 8 minutes, and it took 5 minutes to find the remote control to turn the football off. True story, that. We got 3 minutes with him. So, BB, tell us... Oh, it's time. Okay. let's just talk a little bit about things like the trombone. The Groove Armada sound is like... You know, it's that kind of nexus between dance music and dance hall and a bit of dub and pure pop music. But Andy's trombone, that sounds like a euphemism, and it's not. Grow up! Is sliding in and out. It's one of the signature sounds. And I mean, I know that you... Tell us a little bit about that. And you mentioned your dad before and the blues and stuff. Was it an idea at the beginning to use brass quite up front in a different
way? No, I think it's like
way.
Almost everything in life is chance, isn't it? So I grew up playing the trombone because my dad did. I thought I wanted to be a jazz player, and then I went out and heard Sasha DJing, and the rest is history. and with that, it sort of worked its way into the Groove Armada thing, just because we were DJing in the East End of London, which was still pretty derelict at that time. We got sent off to make some tunes to promote the parties that we were doing. For reasons that neither of us can remember, we ended up doing that in a country cottage in Ambleside, and I just do not know why that happened.
Amazing.
But we were there, and we were getting our sort of waffles and Boddingtons from the village shop, and there was this bowl of 50p CDs there. And on the top of it was Sounds of the 50s, and we thought there might be a little sample on there. On that was a tune by Patti Page called Old Cape Cod, which is the vocal out the river. Really nice chords. So back at the cottage, I was working the chords out, and I had a jazz gig coming up because at the time that was still my sort of living. So I had the trombone with me, so I was practicing over the top of these chords and played this little riff, and it's a standard old riff that me and my dad always used to play. And we were like, that sounds really nice, but we haven't got any microphones here. But there was a hi-fi in the cottage, and anyone who's done O-level physics, maybe not GCSE, will know that microphones and speakers are the same thing, but the other way around. So we attached a guitar wire onto this speaker and recorded the trombone using the speaker as a demo, but it kind of sounded quite Louis Armstrong-y as a result. And lo-fi, so that's the version that became the version. And then obviously that tune, once Zoe Ball played it and they got married to it and all the rest of it, that became such a big tune for us that the trombone was all of a sudden in a situation where you stand up in front of big festival crowds and you pull up the most archaic of instruments and get a big cheer.
It's Andy's trombone, everybody! That's a remarkable story. And it saw Heath Robinson, the technology that you sort of took this hi-fi apart and recorded it like that. That's incredible.
Heath Robinson is about the best description of the last 25 years, I think.
Just you're just chancing it, but it seems to be working pretty well so far. But I mean, we'll move on to the next act pretty soon, and you're going to decide on a joint headliner. But we should think a little bit about food as well, because it is about lunchtime. What is the perfect festival food, do you think, to serve up to people at this incredible festival that you put on?
Oh, good question. I mean, I'm a bit of a barbecue head, so it's going to have to be something like that. But, you know, I've done it in a modern, funky way. There's a guy we know called Richard Turner. He does all that Hawksmoor stuff. We hang around with him. He's fun. So I think we get him in to do one of his Hawksmoor barbecues. That would be nice.
You know,
we
could
maybe a whole pig. I know, but for vegetarians, we do some other options too. But, yeah, something like that.
We could do a tofu pig.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's what we'll do, a tofu pig.
I'd love to see a tofu pig.
Yeah.
Lowestoft is renowned for its soybean cultivation, so it's all local.
Lowestoft's big on that, isn't it? Yeah. Let's move on to the next act, actually, because we don't want to make you late, ironically, for your own festival appearance. That would be utterly ridiculous. This is kind of the sunset moment, this. So just before we get to who it is, who's at this beautiful Perfect Festival? Who would be in your crew? I mean, would it be family? Would it be friends? Who would it be? And I'd like you to interject a few either fictional or living or dead rock star type characters into that group as well, if you can.
Well, I mean, definitely all the crew that we've been around with the band, you know, we've had the same technical backline crew pretty much the last 20 years, and they are practically family. So it would be rude not to invite them. They'd all be treble A's. They can do whatever they like. Free bar for a lot of them. Same for the band. Brian Ferry's got to be there. I mean, we're name dropping horribly during this thing.
Well, you can't help it. He's another guy with all these people.
He's so smooth. So he could maybe work the backstage bar as a kind of.
He could do the cocktails in his sort of white dinner jacket.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Yeah.
I always imagine him talking like this, but that's Prince Charles, obviously.
He's actually a Geordie, isn't he? So,
fucking hell, like.
As you've mentioned him, that's a good point to. We must bring that up because had he not done all that much collaborating at the point where you worked with him, was that another one where you had to sort of tease him into it?
We really had to tease him in, like multiple curries, lots
curries.
Of meals. He loves a curry, yeah. We had a couple of them, and he takes ages to work. So this track that he worked on was a track called Shameless that's on a album we do called Black Light, and it took like 6 months, the genesis of that, 7 months, and he'd go into his studio every night. He has a studio called Jericho Studios, which I think is where he grew up in Newcastle, and I'd sit in there and he'd be playing me all this old Roxy music stuff, and I'd be like, this is ridiculous, you're asking my opinion about what Brian Ferry's doing, but at the same time thinking, have you finished our track yet? we got that, and that Shameless is a really beautiful piece of music. It's peak Ferry, very kind of sexy, mellifluous delivery. It's a real great track, and we still kind of stayed in touch with him afterwards, and we still bump into him from time to time.
He seems like a really mercurial character to me because he, like you say, he's from the northeast, but in my head, he's kind of a posh bloke.
Yeah,
and he's not. He is and he isn't, and he's incredibly cool. He's sort of. I mean, Roxy Music were the template for so many things from the 70s onwards, weren't they? It was them and Bowie, really.
Sure.
I mean, I remember standing pretty much next to him watching Mogwai in Newcastle once. He was wearing a massive, told this story before, a massive parka, floor-to-ceiling parka. And he just turned around and went, it's very loud, isn't it?
It's Prince Charles again.
It was Prince Charles, sorry, in the parka. It wasn't. I always get those two mixed up. As do we all. And I've got to bring this up as well. You're going to hit the stage momentarily and you're going to tear the roof off and it's going to be incredible. Any spoilers, anything that you want to reveal about the set? Have you got any special guests, anything like that, or special moments that or you just want to keep
They're
it
all getting
wraps?
Ready for low stuff, so it's just going to be us two this evening, I'm afraid, but yeah. No, but it is going to be a tour of the last 25 years. We're not going to just play all the modern weird stuff, don't worry.
But is this kind of it for you guys? Are you drawing a line here? Is this really going to happen?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's not quite it. I mean, we've got another weekend and then we're going to go to Australia hopefully in November. But then this is the end of the cycle for us as a live band, yeah. It just felt the right time, you know, like kind of 25 years, still performing relatively well, I'd like to say. I'm still proud of the gigs that we put out. We're not limping on or off stage yet. So it just feels like the right moment. Andy's, you know, very busy with his other activities and farming, and I'm working as a therapist. So we've got other stuff going on, but we'll still DJ, still make music. And, you know, any of us is like 10 million and we'll come out of retirement in 10 years' time.
10 million, yeah?
Yeah, that's all it's going to take.
A couple of people scribbling that amount down on the back of the beer mat. 10 million, that's cheaper than I was expecting. I was going to go in higher than that. And you mentioned it a bit there. I mean, Andy, if I'm not mistaken, you're a sort of you're a bit of a farming legend in France. Didn't you receive the equivalent of a king knighthood in France for your services to agriculture?
I did, awarded through slightly gritted teeth from the French agriculture minister. But yeah,
they don't like giving prizes to English guys, do they? I don't think. And you, Tom, so do you think that the therapy, I mean, a reductive question in a way, but do you think you've had a bit of training in working with people in difficult mind states, in difficulties, by working with rock stars, by running Lovebox, by getting all this talent marshalled? Do you think that sort of put you in a bit of an advantage position as far as working in your field?
Yeah, I think it, obviously, yes. But I think it's also just about the way that you manage pressure and the manner you manage stress and anxiety in your life. And we have plenty of that. And, you know, that's good. You know, anxiety can be an exciting thing. So it's just about how you find your way around all that. So yeah, and definitely, like, you know, that's been something that I've got a lot better at doing. I don't really get anxious anymore. I really enjoy the shows, but it's taken me about 15 years to get to that point. Yeah. So yeah, no, I think it's been a really great grounding for it, you know, and you know, you gain a lot of perspective when you do stuff like this.
Yeah. Too much perspective, as they said in Spinal Tap, didn't they? I think they were right. Okay, well, let's see here. We must be there or thereabouts. Who are we playing at the Sunset Moment? Who's the band?
Well, we've got two, I think. So the next two are both going to be joint choices, I think. So we're going to do, like, this will be like a sunset end of set, and then we're going to have an after party, because obviously we're DJs. So,
of course.
I mean, the sunset set, it's an obvious one, but it's Prince. It has to be Prince. And you know, the thing about that is it almost feels possible. So I was looking it up, but I don't know if you know, but in 2011, Prince played Hop Farm. Do you remember that festival?
Yeah.
He just rocked up at Hop Farm. So, like,
this,
if you do Hop
there.
Farm, we'd get him down to Lowestoft.
You would have even got him for Lowestoft Live.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, he's dead, but I mean, but you could have easily got him. I mean, you could have got him on Lovebox, probably.
Well, we tried.
Did you?
Well, yeah, I mean, we knew the guy that booked him for Hop Farm, but he's just obviously a man who moved in extremely mysterious ways. Yeah. But we never gave up that dream of hoping that might happen. But for now, we've got a fancy festival. He's there, and he's the guy that's going to bring it home, yeah.
My God. I think Prince is one of the legendary artists that comes up perhaps most often. Why is that? What is it about Prince that makes him the musician's musician in a way, do you think?
I mean, I think it's, you know, like the kind of the breadth of his work, you know, that raw funk that he did in those early records. There's those great records like Dirty Minds, where he's in those little black pants, mm-hmm. just looking amazing. And then you go through to Sign of the Times, which is a, you know, incredibly beautifully produced record, you know. And then there's just a performer. He's just second to none, isn't he? I mean, he can play every instrument you can imagine. And he just nails it every time. One of those guys that goes on stage doesn't even seem to have a set list. He just calls out the tracks he feels like playing. And then he's like doing those amazing little sets. You remember in London for about a couple of weeks, he's just popping up in funny places. So I think it's the ability to be an amazing recording artist, but then to deliver live, and he's just got everything. And he would be my fantasy all the way, yeah.
To be able to play a Hendrixian guitar solo in very high heels and tight leather black pants.
I mean, I've tried it.
How did it go?
Not too well.
But that's another question I must ask, really, before we let you go and it becomes a hostage situation and the manager comes on and wrestles me away. But you've been on stage with so many different acts. You've played so many festivals. In fact, I lost about an hour. You've got these websites now that work where it tells you just about every gig that a band has ever played. I don't know if you ever looked at yours.
No.
It's all there. I don't know how much you remember. I wouldn't have been able to remember hardly any of it. But do you... Is there an artist that you've seen at the side of the stage and thought, fucking hell, I wish I was that guy, I wish I was that person? Because you seem to have it pretty good in Groove Armada. You can do whatever you want. You've got freedom, musical freedom. But is there anybody that you were particularly envious of and thought, oh, I'd love to bet that?
First thing that comes to mind is we did a gig in New York. We were invited by Elton John, in fact, to do this gig for the Andy Warhol. What was it? What was that magazine called?
Paper magazine.
Yeah. And so it's in this little theatre. And again, the bullshit talent correlation was in full effect because there was these various other artists sort of who were having their little moment in the spotlight at the time, surrounded by so many bodyguards you couldn't get up the stairs. Then there was Elton just strolling about. It's been super cool. And we actually had a really difficult gig because it was obviously high pressure, high octane, and one of the keyboards started making a fire engine noise. So there's this quite sort of odd scene where Jamie, our longest standing squad member, was right front and centre amongst this incredibly sort of hipster New York crowd fiddling about with the kettle lead on this fire engine thing. So it didn't go too well, but after that, we were standing in the side of the stage when Elton came on, and it was just him and a piano, and it was just very humbling.
Yeah.
That this guy just sat there, just filled the room in every way, like as a person, musically, it was just a different level of everything.
We've got to get, I mean, Elton's got to do something at Lowestoft Live, hasn't he, I think.
We can serve cocktails with Brian, that'd be great.
That's it.
Or we'll play the piano in the bar.
What a brilliant idea that is, Tom. So you know, you've got Hall & Oates, you've got Candy Staton, you've got Richie Havens, you've got Prince, you've got a Groove Armada after show. And at the after show, you've got Brian Ferry in a white dinner jacket serving cocktails while Elton John plays the fucking piano.
Yeah.
It's got to be a sellout, hasn't it?
Sure. It's got to be a sellout. That's what they're doing next, ladies and gentlemen. So look forward to it. You heard it here first. Lowestoft Live with Andy and Tom from Groove Armada. What? Have an absolutely incredible set tonight. I know it's going to go off and it's going to be fantastic. Where are you at now? Are you excited? Are you nervous? Where are we at?
That's sort of, you know, the perfect pre-gig flutter stage, you know. You never lose that, you know. It's that thing where you're standing on stage, as we will be shortly, with your mates. The lights go down and there's that noise, and if you could bottle that feeling, you'd sell a lot of it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Any final words, boys, before we let you go?
No, I mean, it's been lovely having you. I mean, I would like to have a DJ. Is that all right? We could just have a DJ back there, just very quick. I just wanted to have Larry Levan on the lineup because he's a guy that I never saw, and I always wanted to be around in that period, that late 70s, early 80s New York. So if we could just chew on him into the lineup, that would be a dream come true for me.
Maybe he could spin a few between the sets. That would be quite nice.
That's nice. Yeah.
And then when Elton goes for a cocktail, then
Larry
he can carry
jump on. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What can I say except it's been a real pleasure. I'm glad I caught you guys, Andy and Tom, Groove Armada, massive round of applause.
Thank
you so much for being here, guys. Thanks for missing what you've been missing. Have a great rest of the weekend. Subscribe to the lineup.